Please be seated. The calendar of feasts tells us as a worshiping community what to pay attention to and what to remember. And today we are to remember Samuel Seabury, the first bishop of the Episcopal Church. Born in Connecticut in 1729, he was ordained in England in 1753. And returned to serve parishes in New York and New Jersey. During the American Revolution, he remained loyal to the British crown and served as a chaplain to the British Army. After the Revolution, a secret meeting of Connecticut clergymen sent Seabury to seek episcopal consecration in England. After a year of negotiation, Seabury found it impossible to obtain episcopal orders from the Church of England, because as an American citizen, he could not swear allegiance to the crown. So then he turned to the non-juring bishops of the Episcopal Church in Scotland. And on November 14, 1784, in Aberdeen, he was consecrated by Scottish bishops in the presence of clergy and laity. On his return home, Seabury was recognized as Bishop of Connecticut in convocation on August 3, 1785. Seabury kept his promise, made in a concordat with the Scottish bishops, to persuade the American church to adopt the Scottish form for the celebration of Holy Eucharist. He died on February 25, 1796, and is buried beneath St. James Church, New London, Connecticut. Seabury gave the episcopate for America and the Scottish rite for the prayer of consecration in the American Prayer Book. Samuel Seabury lived faithfully in that intersection of religious creed, church polity, and the politics of empire and its colonies. I don't know all the details, but I'm absolutely sure that there were economic dimensions at work in that mixture as well. So we have to do this, too, in our day. The Episcopal Church, the Seminary of the Southwest, dioceses, parishes, and leaders. After the presidential election of 2016, how do we stay faithful in the din and division, in violent words and actions? And just for the record, I have stumbled into each ditch that I described last Monday. Self-righteousness, making assumptions about my neighbor, temptations to cast out and dismiss and despair. How do we decide what to pay attention to, what to let in, and how to expend our finite energy and short lives in this time? I think it's honest to proceed with only partial answers, with only inklings, with humility, and with conversation. And I'm going to start this humble conversation with a story from my hometown of New York City. It's a little offbeat, and it's not churchy at all, but bear with me. There's a tunnel which connects the 14th Street stations at 7th Avenue and the Avenue of the Americas. It's plastered with thousands of words and phrases scrawled on pastel-covered notes. There are messages of love and support, of fear and anger and hope, all written by strangers to one another. Anyone can post one. This was the idea of artist Matthew Chavez last week. Mr. Chavez said he arrived at the tunnel on Wednesday with a stack of sticky notes, some pens, and an open mind. "Express yourself," he posted on the wall. Thousands of people responded to his offer by day's end. Comments on these post-it notes on the wall of the subway station capture a range of reactions to the election's outcome. Now, remember, this is New York City, so it's not divided like the rest of the country. It's pretty, was pretty much anti-Trump. But imagine this in a different location in a minute. Okay, so these are what the comments on the Post-it notes say. Keep your head high. It's an honor to be in this struggle with you. Love is the new black. Mobilize. One note shows a simply drawn heart, broken and bleeding. And there are many references that celebrate New York's diversity. I wanted to give people the opportunity to express something without talking about it, said Mr. Chavez, who also does a performance piece in the tunnel called Subway Therapy, in which he plays a therapist at a card table to whom people can unburden themselves. But since Wednesday, the Wall has become one of New York's most significant public forums, a tribute to the city's diverse voices, a monument to its drive to speak out, and a testament to the strength that New Yorkers in moments of intense emotion often draw from one another. There's a beautiful picture of the subway wall with Post-it notes of different colors stuck evenly on the tiles, the subway tiles, all over the wall. Crowds gather there not even to take the subway, but to read the wall and to talk to one another. When I think about this subway wall and people posting notes and gathering together, I imagine it as a kind of funky, secular, pluralistic liturgy of shared emotion, shared experience, of communion. I imagine the wall of colored notes as the crazy dinner party with the blind, the poor, and the lame. I think of each note as an offering of self, soul, and body. I think about it as a sacrament of putting the tangible and invisible and intangible into the material of paper and ink and adhesive. I love how live it is, how low-tech, how local, in contrast to sanitized clicking from individual laptops in little apartments all over Manhattan. Local, low-tech, live. So simple. The artistic imagination, the sacramental imagination. And yes, the article says it's therapy and catharsis, but could this funky secular liturgy morph into something more? Into hope, into making alliances, into strangers becoming friends, discovery of common values and shared loves, whether Italian, Lithuanian, Jewish, Buddhist, Christian, or none. The sacramental imagination, the artistic imagination being the beginning seed of action. I think of the typewriter rodeo, turning experience into poems. I think of Jackie Vinson making music all night long. What would happen if we reflected on this subway tunnel and its improvised liturgy, and we used our gift of liturgical heritage from Seabury and from the Scottish Prayer Book and used it along with our creative and flexible imaginations as Episcopalians? What could we do? What would we do? We know what to do and what to remember. Take, eat. This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. But with Brother Curtis Almquist, who has this wonderful question that he asks, what is the invitation here? What is the invitation? What else is there for us to remember and what else shall we do? Amen.